out-of-towner arrives in Los Angeles, never gets out of his armored car, doesn't make even a passing attempt to know our city, or its people, or its foundations, claims we've been destroyed?
You know, I landed, when I saw this city, when I was driving through to come to this FBI building, all I could think about is what a great American city Los Angeles is, and what a great tragedy it is that we have allowed illegal immigration and rioting to destroy, I think, one of the great gems of American of the American family.
Welcome to the TGIF edition of the LA Local for Friday, June 20th, 2025. It's brought to you by the LA Car Guy family of dealerships. I'm your host, Jonathan Service, coming to you from an utterly destroyed city of Los Angeles, but thankfully all of those National Guard troops and Marines holed up in federal buildings rode to our rescue. We were off yesterday to mark Juneteenth. I hope you got the day off to celebrate the end of slavery in the United States. Somehow the Juneteenth holiday is feeling especially poignant today. Coming up on the local, the Vice President of the United States comes to Los Angeles and lies through his teeth about what's gone down in the city over the last couple of weeks. Mayor Karen Bass responds. The Dodgers finally weigh in on ICE raids in their city, and it's a little underwhelming. And California's autonomy to set its own environmental policies takes a beating from Trump and the Supreme Court. So let's start with Vice President J.D. Vance, who came to L.A. today for a little propaganda and a fundraiser. Let's not forget, a very high-priced fundraiser that's happening later tonight. I'm just going to play a couple of minutes from Vance, who, prior to holding this rather lame news conference, just here's the sequence of events. He flew into LAX. He drove from the airport to the west side of L.A. He walked into the Westwood Federal Building and then had the press conference. That's it. That's the extent of the VP's experience in L.A. before he made these comments I'm about to play. He did make an effort to meet with some of the immigrants of the city or business leaders or the mayor of Los Angeles or the governor of California or the LAPD chief or the L.A. County sheriff. Nothing. Here's what we got from him.
The past few years have actively encouraged illegal migration into this community, have strained public services, have strained law enforcement, and really have offered generous benefits, not to American citizens, but to illegal immigrants to break the law, to come into our country, and to receive generous public assistance for having done so. What has that done? That has created an illegal immigration crisis, of course, facilitated by the policies of the Biden administration, and there is perhaps nowhere where that crisis has fallen harder than in the great city of Los Angeles. And, you know, I landed, when I saw this city, when I was driving through to come to this FBI building, all I could think about is what a great American city Los Angeles is and what a great tragedy it is that we have allowed illegal immigration and rioting to destroy, I think, one of the great gems of American of the American family. Now, these guys surrounding me represent the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They represent immigration enforcement. And, of course, we just met some Marines who represent the Department of Defense. All of these law enforcement officials were necessary because what happened is, in response to the basic federal action of enforcing immigration law, you had local officials and radical left-wing agitators who actually encouraged violence, who facilitated violence and rioting in the great city of Los Angeles. What happened here was a tragedy. You had people who were doing the simple job of enforcing the law, and they had rioters egged on by the governor and the mayor, making it harder for them to do their job. That is disgraceful. And it is why the president has responded so forcefully what happened in Los Angeles. Number one, because we've got to enforce our borders and get so many of these criminals out of our country to begin with. And number two, when you have violent agitators who make it impossible for the law enforcement to do their job, it is necessary to protect them and to defend them. We have to remember that the Friday that the riots started, before there was ever a single National Guardsman, before the President of the United States had sent in additional federal resources, you had law enforcement officers who were being captured and beaten by violent mobs egged on by Gavin Newsom and other officials. It was necessary to send the National Guard to stop that process, to bring some order back to this great city, and to make it possible for the people's president to enforce the people's immigration law.
Okay, a few things. The first one will probably be missed by most people who watched or listened to Vance's news conference because you're not journalists and you didn't see how all of this was put together. The vice president's team didn't actually allow any members of the local press into that news conference to ask him questions. Instead, there was a few national reporters there, and the few questions Vance did take were all clearly designed to be very supportive softballs. What does it say about the convictions of your arguments that LA has been destroyed when you won't even face a local reporter who would have certainly challenged such an absurd notion? The claim that Vance made in there that members of law enforcement were captured and beaten before the National Guard arrived. I'm sorry, what? When did that happen? Would the vice president like to give the time and the location and some more details of said captured law enforcement members being beaten on the streets of Los Angeles? Where the hell did that come from? The National Guard and the Marines didn't save anything, nor do they really have to do anything at all aside from stand in front of federal properties downtown. When the violence did rear up from fringe elements of protesters on that Sunday, June 8th, in a couple of blocks of downtown Los Angeles, it was the LAPD that dealt with it, not the National Guard, not the Marines. Oh, and then there was this thinly veiled gem from Vance, misidentifying California senior U.S. Senator Alex Padilla, who, of course, was thrown to the ground and handcuffed last week for asking Kristi Noem a question.
Well, I was hoping Jose Padilla would be here to ask a question, but unfortunately, I guess he decided not to show up because there wasn't the theater. And that's all it is. You know, I think everybody realizes that's what this is. It's pure political theater.
I mean, the gall to call this political theater when the entire display today was low rent, low budget theater. But let me shut up for a minute and throw it over to Karen Bass, who answered Vance's laughable claims.
Mr. Vice President, how dare you disrespect our senator? You don't know his name? But yet you served with him before you were vice president, and you continue to serve with him today, because the last time I checked, the vice president of the United States is the president of the U.S. Senate. You serve with him today, and how dare you disrespect him and call him Jose? But I guess he just looked like anybody to you. Well, he's not just anybody to us. He is our senator. And you fly in, you parachute in the city. I don't know if you've ever been here before. You parachute in the city, you pass all kinds of judgment, and then you leave. And you add to the provocation, you add to the division, or you attempt to create division in our city. But I just want you to know that our city is standing together. We are united. You might attempt to create division, but you are united. Standing with me today are families, business owners, community leaders, representatives. We had peaceful protests. At the end of those protests, when you have the people that are scragglers or who intervene at the last minute, and it reached maybe 100 people, and they graffitied up buildings. And let me tell you, I'm not underestimating how serious that was, the vandalism all throughout the downtown area. Okay? There was one day where there was a looting of businesses. There were windows that were broken. But it was a very small couple of blocks in our city, a handful of people. It is an absolute lie to say the city of 500 square miles, when maybe 2 square miles, there were problems that lasted a few hours that we were perfectly capable of handling. That's how I would describe what is going on in our city. And you can look at the streets today. Our streets have been peaceful. This is Friday. There have not been any problems in our city since the protests that happened on Saturday, period.
Look, we can debate immigration policies in this country. We can condemn the element of protesters that tends to turn violent in LA. God knows it's happened at many different demonstrations dating back over many different years. We can feel embarrassed as a city that we do have this element that causes trouble and the vandalism and the provocations when it has broken out over the years. We can criticize the leadership of Newsom and Bass. Lord knows they've deserved it. But if we're not operating in reality with like a basic fidelity to facts, then what are we even doing here? J.D. Vance clearly had one mission during his time in L.A., to be a basic internet troll and not actually learn anything about the city, its people, its immigrant history, or what, why, and how everything that went down over the last 2 weeks unfolded the way it did. Quick break here to take care of some business. When we're back to the local, the Dodgers meekly respond to criticism of its silence over the ICE raids, and California's clean air mandates get smacked down at the Supreme Court. It's the L.A. Local. Thanks for sticking with us on today's LA Local. I'm your probably way too opinionated and angry host, Jonathan Service. It was delayed, but now we know how the LA Dodgers plan to reach out to immigrant communities in Southern California. The franchise issued a statement that says it has committed $1 million towards direct financial assistance for families of immigrants impacted by, and this is a direct quote, recent events in the region. The words raid, sweep, ICE, DHS, Border Patrol, never mentioned. The team also says additional community efforts on food insecurity and mental health will be announced in the coming days. The financial aid is going out in cooperation with the city of Los Angeles. Dodgers president and CEO Stan Kasten said the franchise has heard the calls for the team to take a leading role on behalf of those affected. So he reached out to LA Times sports columnist Dylan Hernandez. He had called the Dodgers' silence on the ICE raids cowardly. Our Margaret Carrero talked with Dylan.
I think it was pretty much what was expected. You know, once they made an announcement a couple of days ago that an announcement of sorts was coming, I kind of figured, money would be involved. It's going to be kind of interesting, I think, to see how this lands, because I think there was a lot of talk on social media about an anti-Dodger protest, and I believe it's still scheduled to go on Saturday. There was word also that, and I believe this morning, more than 50 religious and community leaders had signed a petition that was sent to the Dodgers demanding that they take a stand here. So, it does look a little bit like they just kind of, that they got their arm twisted into doing something they didn't want to do. So I think it's going to, part of this is going to be, maybe like what else people say, right? The Stan Kasten, the team president, who's kind of been in hiding, for the last couple of weeks. Will he come out and actually talk about this a little more extensively? Because I do think, them being quiet up to this point was seen, as a betrayal by a community that has really financially supported this organization, helped them set attendance records. So I am kind of curious to see if this will be enough. And my guess is that it's going to elicit a wide range of responses from various people.
It's kind of just a wait and see about how it will land with the fans, right, at this point?
Yeah. Keep in mind, right, I mean, people, want to watch the Dodgers. Even after kind of all this and the little, right, and the big kind of flub they had with the the singer who sang the national anthem in Spanish, and, she felt like she was basically, chased out of that place. Shohei Ohtani came back to pitch for the first time in 2 years, and people were very excited about that, at least for a day, right? So people really want to watch Ohtani. People really want to watch Mookie Betts. So I'm sure there are going to be some fans that are kind of very conflicted, and it's going to be this battle inside them. I think, their desire to watch Ohtani and the guys and maybe kind of their disappointment with the team, and they're going to have to kind of balance those feelings out.
You said in the beginning that it kind of feels like the Dodgers kind of had their arms twisted to do something maybe they didn't necessarily want to do. Do you think it amounted to, fans are speaking out? There was some talk about, protest the Dodgers and just don't go to games, go watch them somewhere else, don't go to the stadium.
Yeah, I 100% think it was that. Because, right, at the beginning of this year, of this season, they went to go visit Trump at the White House. They try to kind of play it off as this isn't political, but it is political, right? And you can't really kind of separate those two things. I think they kind of wanted to stay out of the administration's crosshairs, in part because of how vindictive this president and his administration can be. I think they did want to stay quiet, and I even just kind of go back to the previous owner, Frank McCourt, right, who was a very unpopular, kind of cheaper owner. And there was an incident in the parking lot that kind of, right, eventually led to him having to sell the team. Baseball basically forced him to sell the team. And that really came down to the fans. Fans stopped showing up to the games, and that's what eventually triggered the sale. And ultimately, these teams, yeah, sure, they're privately owned, but they do rely on the support of the community. And, when the community does threaten to kind of take away that support, or actually does take it away, these owners have to listen. And I really do believe that's what happened here.
All right. LA Times sports columnist Dylan Hernandez, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Just again, it's worth highlighting here. The Dodgers are donating $1 million to immigrant support groups, which ain't nothing. But for some perspective, they're paying Shohei Ohtani $700 million over 10 years. Just saying. Finally tonight, the Supreme Court dealt a major setback to California's clean air initiatives today, clearing the way for oil and gas companies to sue the state over its strict air quality standards. Rob Archer talked about it with fossil fuel industry analyst Tom Cloza. He actually downplayed the long-term impacts. Take a listen.
If this ruling took place 5 years ago, it might have a future. But I think we're probably looking at closing the barn door after all the cattle have been released. You're going to see refinery closures that are in earnest going to happen in the next few months and then again next spring. And this is unlikely to change it. What is interesting is that there's been a lot of pressure that suggests that the states, and particularly California, does not have the ability to sort of set a deadline for use of fossil fuels. So, you know, that'll be a precedent. I think the problem is by the time the Supreme Court gets to it and it works its way through the courts, not going to really have much impact on California supply. You guys are probably have a cooked goose later this year and again in 2026.
Yeah, and not only that, but also there's the issue of the air quality, the smog issues. You know, California got some waivers and exemptions on those smog things. Could any of these lawsuits that are now going to be allowed down the road, could they force California to bring some of those exemptions back, or bring them down, I should say?
Yeah, I think it makes it tougher to make changes that help the air quality out there. The fact of the matter is that most of the gasoline that's been used there for the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years has really cleaned up the atmosphere. And I don't think there's going back. I think you're still going to have to use a special blend, you know, known as CARBOB. So I think most of the real dramatic changes have already happened. And our view is that refining is going to lose two units in California, one by October 1st and one next year in the second quarter. And that's going to mean expensive gasoline. I don't think that they'll change the specifications. This is going to have a long time to move through the courts. It could set it up for something where, let's say you have a refinery that gets knocked out or whatever. It might make it easier to issue a waiver that could use a little dirtier gasoline, you know, while there's some sort of a crisis.
California already has, you know, very high prices, as you point out, and the possibility down the road, you're saying, of even higher prices coming. Could people in California welcome the idea of maybe gas and oil companies being able to take some more bites out of California regulations?
They'll welcome it. You know, I mean, people do want the free lunch, but I don't think that they want to go back to using some of the dirtier blends that were used, let's say, in the 1980s or whatever. So I think that they'll basically be out there complaining and moaning about the numbers, and the numbers could be spectacular. The one thing I would suggest, though, is you might see spasms that take it up to $6 or $7 a gallon for gasoline, but they won't last long. You know, one thing we've seen in the last year or so is that a lot of foreign refiners are very happy to make California spec gasoline. You know, they're going to have to make more when Valero closes in the Bay and when Phillips closes in Los Angeles. But it's very, very profitable for people who can make the blends that you use there.
Worth paying attention to what Cloza said in there, the impending closures of several gasoline refineries in the state. That is what could bring real price pressures to the pump. And we'll be following that closely here on The Local. All right, I'm just going to end today's admittedly angry version of The Local by quoting Howard Beale in the movie Network. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You got to say, I'm a human being, goddammit. My life has value. So I want you to get up now. I want you all to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, stick your head out, and yell, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. This has been the LA Local for Friday, June 20th. It's sponsored by the LA Car Guy family of dealerships. You can see the inventory for all 12 dealerships at lacarguy.com. Have a good weekend in our glorious Southern California, everybody. See you on Monday.